Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart was with us 1 year ago, and things look a little bit different today than they did then. Here's a little bit about what Sheriff Stewart said about the challenges her department faced amid discussions of police reform last year.
One of my platforms when I ran for office was, the police don't tell you what you need. We're here to help you solve problems. So it truly is, it has to be a partnership. We have to keep our attention on the prize, okay? The prize is a more livable county with a quality of life that is higher. It took a while to get here. It's going to take us a while to move into areas of positive change.
We'll begin right after NPR News. Call with your questions, 575-646-2212, for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. It is 106. Good afternoon. This is KC Counts. It's Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media, 575-646-2212. The telephone number to call to be a part of the show today with Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart. You can also follow along on Facebook and leave a comment or ask a question there. We're happy to have you join us however it is you choose to listen and participate in Voice of the Public. And believe it or not, and this was a bit of serendipity, I went back to the last time Sheriff Stewart was on Voice of the Public just to go over the things we talked about then, and realized that it was just about exactly July 10th, 1 year ago today, that Sheriff Stewart was on Voice of the Public. So welcome back. It's been a busy year for you, hasn't it?
Thank you. We were in the thick of pandemic when we last spoke, and we're hopefully coming out of that.
Not only that, we were in the thick of a very serious conversation about police reform across the country. And you made the point last time that, you know, obviously your focus is on what's happening in Doniana County, and that you didn't see quite the same level of issues here in Doniana County that we saw even, for example, in Albuquerque or the rest of the country. How would you say a year later things are looking when you compare those two?
Well, I think we're holding our own. I'm not seeing an uptick in negativity towards our services. I'm happy to say I think we've improved our services in general in a variety of ways. So the constituency we serve has been fairly responsive to us and supportive. They continue to be. And for that, I greatly appreciate that on their part.
Well, we'll get into some more detail on that, but we already have a caller on the line. Della, thank you for calling Voice of the Public. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I wrote a question, and I'm going to read it and edit it as I go along, Sheriff Stewart. Now, I know this, my concern is by, is about, the increased perception of, militarization within the police force. I know this incident was out of your jurisdiction, but you've probably heard the recent news story about an officer in Las Cruces who came to do a welfare check and ended up shooting, the property owner's dog. I knew this dog, you know, and this incident really shook me up. The last time I saw the dog was that Stormy was at the dog park. He was a regular there, and he came up to me and leaned against me to get his back scratched. And apparently what a friend told me was that, you know, he was startled by the approach of a stranger, ran out of the dog door, and at which point the officer, you know, pulled out his gun and promptly just shot him. I really can't understand why a law enforcement officer, you know, that the first impulse was to just shoot and kill. And, you know, we hear in the news repeatedly all over the nation, not so much here in this county, but this impulse to just shoot and kill. And it seems like the officers aren't being trained to do anything else. And I'm just wondering, is my perception correct? Is there an increased militarization in the police force? nationwide? And if, are there any programs in place to restore the public's confidence in the, you know, our local law enforcement? I really am starting to be skeptical. I always had faith and trust in the police department and, you know, was proud of the job they did, but I'm starting to lose that trust and confidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Della, for that question. I do want to separate a couple of phrases you've used. Militarization and use of force. You didn't use use of force, but I will interject that. Militarization of law enforcement speaks more to using perhaps surplus military equipment and providing that equipment to local police forces. That's the way I see militarization. Use of force, the incident you speak of, I have to say I've never seen that particular video. I do not know the circumstances. But let me tell you from this side of the world, a use of force, which involves, of course, deadly force and drawing one's weapon and firing, there are a lot of factors that go into it. And when you speak of the dog and the dog being friendly, I have no doubt in circumstances that is probably the case. As a person who has been bitten two or three times while doing my duty as a patrol officer, I can tell you we look at this a little bit more challenging. For instance, if the dog is running at you or at an officer while other urgent matters are taking place or other people are humans are entering that equation and they're part of the landscape, we need to focus on the threat at the moment and to threat the threat on the potential minutes to come. So I'm not suggesting this occurred, but the dog may have had to have been essentially moved out of that equation so that the threat of the human or humans might in fact have been the more urgent scenario. So again, I don't defend or deny it or support it. I didn't see the video, but I've been in situations actually in a hallway where I was in a situation, another officer and I, and we were in a quite a large fight in a narrow hallway, and a dog bit me on the leg. Well, I didn't kill the dog, but the dog did suffer a kick to get him out of the way because I had more urgent issues at the moment. So again, just be aware that sometime, especially when you see a video, you're just seeing one perspective on it, and there might be other things going on out of the range of that camera.
Yeah, and with this particular situation, this is just from reporting that I read on this subject. There was a welfare check. A neighbor had called, and police were aware that there were dogs and big dogs. And I believe the caller was instructed to try to get the dogs, you know, out of the situation. One was not able to be corralled, and that's you know, so the officers were coming to do a welfare check. And it was one of the questions that was in my mind is, you know, how do animal control officers go about the job that they have to do on a daily basis? And we don't necessarily hear of them having to shoot dogs that they encounter on a regular basis. And so one of the things that we talked about a year ago when you were here was, you know, joining mental health professionals with police officers when they're this, according to the reports I read, this was a mental health situation. And so mental health practitioners, and then I started thinking, well, perhaps an animal control officer can join the police when they have calls that they know where there are dogs present. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we do join animal control on their calls too. So we are called out to assist them with either not necessarily a vicious animal, but certainly where they're human or humans are involved in trying to the animal control officer is trying to take control, and the humans are involved to the point that it's preventing that. So we do, in fact, assist them. And I'm happy to say shooting or killing any dog or animal is fairly rare. In fact, I can't think of one ourselves for probably well over a year. So it's a pretty rare situation. As to the mental health situation and people going out to assist us, either social workers or therapists or counselors, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of energy right now in the county about how to see that process come to realization. It is a challenge, not only because of lack of those professions in our county in general, but also they have to be available to work 24/7. That's a challenge. A lot of choose to work business hours. So the question then arises, what do we do on off hours or weekends and holidays, when in fact, a lot of those people are in crisis, or those situations do arise on weekends, nights, and holidays. So I think that we still have a ways to go in that discussion. It's got challenges on many levels. I think ultimately will come, not necessarily us, but there will be some solution to how to handle these. And I will say that already dispatch has what are called warm lines, so they can hand off calls to folks that are perhaps entering a crisis but not in full crisis. And so some of those calls are actually being siphoned off now through warm lines. So just know that it is a continuing challenge. For the 41 years I have been in and around this business, it has been a topic of conversation. And I, for one, would like to see us come to some kind of situation that works for everyone. No one wants to harm or injure or kill a person in a mental crisis. That is a heavy burden.
I spoke with El Paso Matters CEO Bob Moore. I speak with him every Friday, but a few weeks ago, they covered a story on the El Paso County Sheriff's Office becoming one of the last major departments in the state to employ this type of combined effort. And they, you know, in the first couple of years, did a report and said that, you know, there was a lot of success there, and that, you know, obviously they needed more funding to move forward and to grow the program. Can you look to El Paso as any kind of example?
Well, part of it is hard looking out of state due to difference in laws and state laws. But let me tell you kind of how we've begun to approach some of this. Is we have a crisis negotiation team that is not part of special response or what people would call SWAT team, but they work often in parallel paths on situations. So if there is a SRT call out, crisis negotiators go out. These are specially trained deputies, and I have about 10 of them right now. And thankfully, we don't have a lot of special response team call outs. So our plan has been to spread these highly trained, specially trained deputies on all the shifts so that we'll get dispatched to begin to focus or to send those types of calls directly to crisis negotiators. It's using their skills that I'm so pleased we don't have to use every day in terms of SWAT callouts, but it's a way to, they will be in uniform and they will respond in a marked car, but their approach due to their training would be a little bit different, we hope. And we think we're going to see some success out of that. So it's using resources we already have so that right now financial considerations aren't the top priority. Rather, let's use our resources more wisely.
It is coming up to 1:20, and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have a question or comment for Sheriff Kim Stewart, Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart on Voice of the Public today. And we're so glad to have you back after 1 year. We discussed the early stages of the formation of the New Mexico Civil Rights Commission. Tell us about your work on the commission and how things progressed through the course of the last year.
That was an interesting experience. I was one of nine commissioners, and we met from the end of July to early November. All those hearings were public hearings, so we did get a fair amount of input from across the state. I ended up one of four dissenters on that, so I was in the minority in terms of the five who sent the recommendation to the legislature to get rid of what's called qualified immunity and to allow for a broader range of civil rights to be tried in state courts as opposed to them having to go into federal court. Federal court is a higher standard, so there was a desire to recognize that New Mexicans have more civil rights than the federal government provides, and therefore now citizens can bring those to state court for consideration. The hope was or is that by getting rid of qualified immunity and allowing states, state courts to address some of these wider issues, that there will be, number one, a chance for New Mexicans' voices to be heard and to be wrongs to be rectified. Let me be clear, I don't object to civil rights at all. What I objected to was that there was the idea that, for instance, if we get rid of qualified immunity, wrongdoers among law enforcement would be held more personally accountable. Well, in the state of New Mexico, we're legally indemnified. So as long as you're within policy or the law, you're protected as an individual law enforcement officer anyway. So I think my objection was sort of more to the marketing of it as opposed to what they were trying to achieve. It was marketed more as a panacea, that it would solve a lot of what were perceived as law enforcement problems, when in fact, getting rid of qualified immunity, we got rid of it. It's now gone for teachers, CYFD workers, a wide variety of public employees no longer have qualified immunity pathways. So that said, it turned out to be a pretty narrow scope of consideration for us. And by the way, I just got an email this morning from someone asking for my input as a commissioner. As of March 31, the Civil Rights Commission was officially ended. We were only seated for 1 year for one reason or for one focus. And we did that. So I'll tell everybody right now, I'm no longer a civil rights commissioner. That process ended.
What do you think would have been a more fruitful outcome?
I think there are situations in our state that are gravely in need of a second, third, fourth, whatever look or first look. That primarily hinges on the Law Enforcement Academy. The Law Enforcement Academy should be a separate entity with its own budget from state police. Currently, its budget runs through state police, and it is state police who decides how much funding the Law Enforcement Academy gets. So when we speak of more training and when we speak of best practices and so forth, that entity sounds like it has a lot of power and control over that process, but it really doesn't. So what needs to happen is we have a true independent law enforcement academy And that's separate from the Law Enforcement Academy Board. People think they're one and the same. They are not. And the Law Enforcement Academy Board needs to be probably have some staffing in terms of investigators to actually look into some of the merits of the cases presented to them regarding LEO wrongdoing. So that's a good start. It would probably, in my opinion, been a far better start to let's go to the beginning where we can get best practices, where we can get a state-of-the-art training, where we can get qualified trainers from not only our state, but across the country to start at the beginning to reform, reshape, and improve a lot of practices in terms of law enforcement in our state. I just thought that if we really want to make a difference, you start at the beginning.
Will there be an effort to that end?
I'm not sure. I believe there will be, I believe it's a Senate bill, and I think it's, I think it was under 375 last session, Senate Bill 375, could be House Bill. That had some of those reforms built into it. I'm hearing as of this week that there is going to be an effort to reintroduce that bill in some form. And I think that that would be a needed path right now. You know, lawsuits, they can be beneficial, but generally what's happened, plaintiffs have been, by the time they sue, they're backed into the corner. You know, the situation is pretty huge. There's an enormous number of considerations by the time someone gets to lawsuit. And it really doesn't have the impact of changing much. True, there are lawsuits, civil rights lawsuits, Miranda versus Arizona, some really major, you know, Terry versus Ohio. There's some major lawsuit that have resulted in wonderful improvements in law, in case law. But by and large, most of these lawsuits never go to trial. They're settled in some type of agreement long before that. And a settlement, frankly, is not going to change anything. Okay. So the few that go to an actual trial and are heard by the jury, you may have some change come out of those, but it's pretty rare. So my attitude is by the time you got to lawsuit, the problem's been there, done that. Let's go to the part where we can actually begin to make some significant change.
It is almost 128-575-6462-12, the telephone number to call for Voice of the Public to speak with Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart today. And Barry's on the line. Good afternoon, Barry. Thanks for calling.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So my question is, if I remember correctly, in New York City, they were able to lower their crime numbers by instituting foot patrols. And here in Las Cruces, I've heard that a problem area is Picacho and 17th and El Paseo near Albertsons. And I was wondering if any consideration has been thought to initiating foot patrols in those areas. I've seen bicycles randomly, police bicycles, but not at any consistent level. And I was wondering if I could get your thoughts on that.
Well, my first thought is those are the City of Las Cruces intersections. So your question is a valid one, but it should be posed to the chief of police, as I have no real jurisdiction in that area. With regard to foot patrols or bike patrols or that kind of thing in general, we have such a different geographical area that it's difficult for us to... There are some areas, for instance, the village of Doniana, we have a foot patrol and bike patrols in those areas. But by and large, we're so spread out, that's not a real effective process for us in rural areas. But you're right, in urban areas, they can be very productive. So I don't mean to pass the question off to Chief Dominguez, but I have to.
Well, we'll have to invite him on and see if we can get him to come on a voice of the public in the near future. You know, talking about crime problems, we see in a lot of places, and you mentioned New York, Barry, that where crime has risen sharply. And I wonder what you're seeing locally in Doniana County, and what do you attribute? Coming out of the pandemic is one thing, out of a year and more of lockdown, and how much do you think that's contributing to those increases, and do you think it's temporary?
As to temporary, I wish I could foresee the future. I don't know. I will say that our uptick in crime has been an uptick in violent encounters between known parties. So you have boyfriend, girlfriend, where the boyfriend holds the girlfriend, essentially kidnaps her, holds her in a room, beats her up seriously. And we've had more incidents, not more, but serious incidents of children being injured and killed. It's like some of this pandemic had some type of effect in terms of family units perhaps being too close to one another for too long, or also that along with financial concerns and pressures and whether or not they can make their mortgage or rent. There were a lot of pressures on people. And I'm certainly not defending these violent actions. I'm just saying that we have seen an uptick with regard to these familial dust-ups, these familial arguments that really quickly have escalated into extreme violence. So it's starting to go down again. That was the big uptick at the beginning of this year. We've actually had a few kidnappings where legitimate kidnappings where boyfriends have kidnapped their girlfriends and taken them across state lines and held them captive. So we've had a few of these ourselves that are just, I think, indicative of maybe many factors. The pandemic may have been a root cause or something that caused the bubble up, but we certainly have. And I'm happy to say that even with the hot weather, they haven't seemed to continue at that pattern. So I hope we don't see that.
I want to get to your series of community meetings next, but first, Jerry is on the line. Welcome to Voice of the Public. Jerry, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Thanks very much for taking my call. This is really a very small matter, but I wanted to run it by you anyway. In February, I was stopped by an officer with Doniana County Sheriff's Department. And I was cited for expired registration and expired driver's license. And I just wanted to say that the officer was, he was professional, very courteous. He was very low-key, but he got the job done. And, you know, although it certainly wasn't a pleasant experience, why, he made the whole thing very painless, and I was quite impressed.
I have a similar experience, Jerry, with Officer Rick. I don't recall if he was I think he was a deputy, and he was the most pleasant officer I had encountered, and I did not get a ticket. I was very grateful.
I should have been so lucky.
It was just the registration. My license was good. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, maybe so. But, you know, police generally get kind of bad rap lately, and I just wanted to say that you've definitely got some good guys on the force.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, thanks. So
thank you, Jerry. I like to hear that any day of the week.
You mentioned, and before we get to the community meetings, because something that sparked my memory on this, Jerry, with Jerry's call, was right at the beginning of the program today, you mentioned that you thought that you had made some meaningful improvements to services. So I'd like for you to explain what those are.
Well, when we lost the ability to reach out to the public, we were pretty busy, I think, with outreach 2019. And when 2020 came along, we weren't really quite sure of how to continue to be responsive and be communicative with our public. And one of the ways that I found was actually quite positive, and hopefully a lot of ways, was when I gave out 25,000 masks. I did almost every single one of those. I did get a little help to keep the line moving. But I got to talk to a lot of people through their car windows. So you'd be surprised what they can say in a matter of seconds, just like Jerry gave us some kudos there. It doesn't take long to hear about a problem in a neighborhood, or can you provide better traffic enforcement here, or whatever the concern was. So we kept up with a lot of public contact in ways that were very unexpected and were very pleasant overall for us. So I think we've gone from we're instituted the Nextdoor app here, and that will cover the entire county, and that is basically an internet way of doing neighborhood watch type situations, where neighborhoods have contact with one another and they can have direct contacts with either our lieutenants or myself. So we're trying to be, I think, more responsive to some of these specific concerns in specific neighborhoods. So we're kind of trying to narrow down to what's the hot problem in whatever community, and who or what is the hot issue. Be more precise, as opposed to casting that real wide net, because my resources are finite as well. So I think we've drilled down on where problems specifically are in the county and are trying to address them and be flexible enough to move on when those problems are addressed.
So you've had two meetings so far, and you've still got two coming up. What have you learned from those community meetings so far, and what are the topics that you're covering?
I think we've had five meetings thus far. We have
forgive me,
coming up. I think I have two more this week, and I have two or three next week, and then we will have kind of hit the whole county, and we'll do it again in a quarter or so, another 3 or 4 months. What we've learned is that people who have come to the meetings have talked very precisely about problems in their neighborhood. And I'm not going to tell you where this is, but I went to one of the meetings, and there was a focus by almost everybody in the room on this one particular address. And by the next morning, we had linked that address with a number of other problems. And I'm happy to say within 2 or 3 days, that problem ended. So it has been really about specific things that people in these neighborhoods had concerns or have concerns about. And again, we're trying to focus on what's your hot problem, and can we address it? So in this particular community I went to, that was just their problem and had nothing to do with Mesquite or any other part of the Hatch or any other part of this county. So it hasn't been any one particular thing that they've brought up. It's really been very specific to their communities. And sometimes all we're doing is a conduit for other county resources. So sometimes they talk to me about animals or trash or this or that, and I just have to be a conduit bringing their information to those in the county that handle that. And we don't refer them. Either I call them or some of my people call these county offices directly and explain the problem. It's very easy to go to a meeting and say, here, just call this number. And you wash your hands of it by saying it's really not my problem. But if they've bothered to come out and talk to me or to us about it, I feel it's the least we can do is to be responsive and help them out.
This particular situation you referred to solve the problem with conversations, with citations, arrests? What was the end result?
Arrest. Yeah, it was arrest. It was another agency, though. It was just an odd combination of things. I actually read a wanted a flyer from another jurisdiction, and I noted that the people told that the community told me about were the same names on the wanted flyer. So I just put a few resources together and married up some effort, and as I say, the problem was solved. But that's a fluke, admittedly, but that was causing a lot of discomfort in that neighborhood. It was causing a lot of issues with other people then being brought into that neighborhood for nefarious reasons or not always good reasons. So by removing the problem, you also remove that traffic flow into that area.
140 now and 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. If you have a question or comment for Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart, who is on the line with us today for Voice of the Public. And you yourself were involved in a very terrible situation, you know, witnessing an event and having to call 911 yourself. Tell us about that experience, and, you know, were you on duty at the time?
No, I was not. It was a Sunday morning. I have to say that situation has not been adjudicated by the county attorney. So until that happens, I can't speak specifically to it, as I was a victim of that crime, one of several. I will say in general, though, that it just speaks to the fact that when trying to render aid or trying to help out others, it's sadly must be somewhat cognizant of what may be going on in the injured person's mind or the state that they're in, or why are they fleeing? Why are they running red lights? Why are they crashing into vehicles? I wasn't the only one involved in that scenario. And I think to those of us who were there, it just shows you that things can happen very quickly. And even if with training, you're not always in a situation to be able to react as you would have liked or wished it had gone otherwise.
Well, it's a traumatic event. And so for members of the community who witness or themselves experience events that leave them traumatized, what kind of services are available?
Well, thanks for that question. I think it's a very important one. First of all, research will tell you that the quicker one accesses care for or some type of direction immediately following traumatic incident is the best. So my advice would be to seek out some type of assistance, therapeutic assistance, immediately in those situations. The longer you get from those incidences, the worse it is in terms of an after effect. That is, of course, sort of the beginning or possibly part of a post-traumatic stress incident. I do want to point out that late last year, we began a peer support program for our deputies here at DASO. And at the beginning of this year, we really put the pedal to the metal and decided that we're going to create an actual peer support program with those among us who are already looked upon as supportive colleagues. Our staff voted on who the 10 people they wanted to be peer supporters. And then along with four therapists, at one point it was six, that's down to about four, and they have special training with regard to first responders. And it's been a great collaborative effort. And I will say that starting in January, it was pivotal because we also had the February incident with the state police, which our deputies were also involved in that. We've had some personal issues among our own staff that have benefited greatly from various debriefing incidents. And so I can't say enough that this is a valuable thing among first responders. It is among victims, of course, but we're people that probably have been overlooked many, many years in terms of our own psychological well-being. And we really felt the need to do something about it. And so this year, unfortunately, we have used our entire team. We've trained our team of peer supporters. Our therapists have just been just remarkable supporters and givers of their time to help us see this through.
575-646-2212, the telephone number for Voice of the Public to speak with Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart. Patty is on the line. Welcome to the program, Patty. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I guess my concern is mostly because I live in the city, and so I'm in a different jurisdiction than the county. But without meaning to embarrass the sheriff, I am just so completely impressed with everything that you do. I mean, you know, I'm not one of those just support those in blue. I listen to the ideas, the things you talk about. The peer support program is awesome. I can't believe you've pulled that together in 1 year, whereas in my jurisdiction, I don't think we've pulled anything together. My hot button issue is the mobile crisis team. I know it's done a little bit different in the county. I don't have any experience with that, but within the city, my concern is that people with mental health issues are not involved in any of the planning whatsoever. And I think that's a vital factor for good mobile crisis response. It's like the community needs to have some input to say what would work, because when officers are called out on a mental health call, that's obviously not a criminal issue. And yet so many things unnecessarily go wrong. And I love the idea that you were talking about of community discussions. This is right up my alley of what I've been wanting to see. And it's just frustrating to be so divided between the city versus the county. And I'm hoping there's some way, because you're pretty darn influential, you know, and certainly with the community. And hopefully you can use some of that influence to maybe get some of those ideas into the city as well. I would love to see community discussions. I would show up immediately. So anyways, just hats off to you, and thank you so much for everything. You're really inspiring.
Thank you very much. No, I don't have much influence beyond my boundaries here in that sense. I mean, I would like to think that I can provide a voice or a position or a point of view that would be helpful. The mobile response, bear in mind, that's a city type of phrasing, mobile response. They often have used that. I've heard it several times. I don't know the extent of their mobile response team. I don't know how that works or if it does work. I think you really bring up a point that was driven home to me when I was on the cannabis committee. I had a series of six public meetings in our county, and they were heavily attended. We counted everybody that walked through the doors, and there were 300 people from all over the county. And one of the things I was really moved by, and I'm trying to do that in my own meetings now, is it isn't just for you all to tell law enforcement. You all have to tell each other things. because even though you may live two or three blocks away, let's face it, we all don't know all of our neighbors. We know maybe right around our house or down our street. And it was really, I think, eye-opening to those who attended those meetings about what their neighbors thought and what their neighbor's position on some of this. One person might think that a speeding car down the street is a big problem, while two doors down, the neighbor will say never even heard the car. So I think what you bring up is I think discussions is the way to go. Our discussions are the way to go.
So
that needs to take place.
Why don't you tell us about the upcoming meetings that you have planned and where folks can find you over the next couple of weeks?
All right. You put me on the spot here, but I think I can come up with it pretty quickly.
All right. Well, I'll give you a moment while I tell everybody that it's 1:50. So we only have 10 minutes to go. And my gosh, my list is still pretty full. But 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you want to try to squeeze a question in or a comment for Sheriff Kim Stewart here before our time is through. And perhaps we can touch on, you mentioned being on the commission for legal adult use cannabis and hearing from people on that issue. And then the law changed on June 29th, so now possession is legal by adults 21 and over in certain amounts. And are you seeing any challenges so far in terms of people's understanding of the law, what they can and cannot do, and what would you think is the important message for people to hear right now regarding that change in state law?
You know, at this, it's been so quick that to have been legalized that we really haven't seen anything. I think it was partially legal June 29th. So we haven't really seen any of uptick in anything. I do want to bring out a point on this, though, and I like to continually make it clear. There is no evidence that legalizing cannabis decreases or any way negatively impacts the illegal market. It does not. Those two entities, the legal market and the illegal market, are going to continue. So we are going to continue to have some challenges, and it's not going to be with personal possession, but it may be with large illegal grow houses and that kind of thing. LA County, just in the last 3 or 4 days, busted out illegal grow, and the value is $1.1 billion with a B dollars. So the illegal market isn't going away. So when people say you're going to have more time because you don't have to be worried about these minor cannabis infractions, it's just going to change. And I think that we are going to, when we do get involved and when we see an uptick, it's going to be on unlicensed growers, on individuals who are still operating and out of sight, out of mind, hopefully, with large illegal grows. And they're not, be aware, I want to tell you, be aware of who you get your products from, because illegal growers use pesticides and often they use gray water. And anything you smoke or ingest, it can really cause problems. So that's my only real advice, is know your source so that you're protected as well. But we're going to see a different challenge, I think, than you might expect.
All right. Well, we'll have to stay on top of that subject. And I wanted to spend at least a couple of minutes, because last weekend was the 4th of July. Can we talk about fireworks and some of the issues that your deputies must run into over the course of the 4th of July?
Here's what we run into. We run into large, not your family friendly incendiary devices, for lack of a better word. They're the kind that professionals own and use and buy, okay? And because of our proximity to a nation where you can get those things quite easily, they end up on our side. So I will say we had very few calls for service on 4th of July night. And 5th and 3rd, because everybody wants to blow off everything over the course of the weekend. But the real challenges were these very large devices that are fairly unregulated when it comes to explosive content, et cetera. So those are the complaints we received. And we had some issues last year with the ordinance, the county ordinance. So I will say that our hands in those matters are fairly tied in this county until that ordinance and those issues are worked out. So we did go out. We've certainly identified with people's issues when they're, you know, launching rockets in the neighbor's yard. I get it. We certainly did. I think overall we had more compliance, though, than we did in the year I was here previously.
All right, 1:55 now at KRWG. Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart is with us. And with a few minutes left, there was a question we got via email regarding whether there was a civilian ombudsman or liaison of some type that citizens could contact in the event that they did have some type of complaint regarding the sheriff's department.
Yes, we have a PSD unit, Professional Standards Division, and some would refer to those as internal affairs. And anytime you can go online and file a complaint. And I just checked it the other day because someone told me that it wasn't functioning. It appears to be functioning. You can go online to the county's website and you will find the form and you can submit that way. Or you can call our number 575-525-1911 and ask for the Professional Standards Unit and make that complaint directly. I do sometimes get a direct complaint from the community. Please know that I don't get involved in those. I pass those right over to internal affairs, because then if it comes back to me for discipline, I'm an objective party in the matter. So I just pass them on. I know people would like my response, but I don't respond, and there are a variety of reasons for it.
And were you able to come up with your community meetings list? I was hoping, I saw
yes.
Someone walk in, and I was hoping, oh, they saved the day.
Yes. So I'm going to be on the 10th, which will be tomorrow at 10 a.m. I'll be in Radium Springs at 12060 Lindbeck Road on the 12th, which will be next Monday night, I believe.
Monday.
I'll be at 9350 Berry Patch. I believe that's in Oregon. And then on next, the 14th, Wednesday, will be the last one for this time period. I will be at 5745 Ledesma in Doña Ana. And that's at 6 p.m. So,
and what are some specific...
schedule for an hour.
That's so hard on Zoom. There's a little bit of a delay there, and it gets us every time. But go ahead. You schedule for an hour.
We schedule for an hour, but we will certainly be there as long as people would like to provide input.
And what are some of the topics that were on your mind going into these meetings?
I am going to remind folks about legalization of recreational cannabis and certainly the things I expressed today. I have already expressed to these meetings. I'm also going to talk a little bit about what came out of the Civil Rights Commission and what that means and who's covered and who isn't. I also wanted to talk a little bit with them about some of the national trends toward police reform, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act and the BREATHE Act. They're wending its way through the federal government houses right now. I'm not sure it'll come to anything, but I did want to point out both of those. They're already best practices being implemented and used by us. So even if they were to go into effect, we're already ahead of that curve.
And with just the few seconds that we have left, I wanted to touch on the changes at the river. I think that was a topic of conversation on our last program that you were on. And so there have been a lot of talk lately about some of the changes that we're seeing. Why don't you let us know about those?
Well, the changes haven't changed in the last 2 or 3 years. As a matter of fact, the no trespassing by vehicles at the river's edge and in the river have been enforced for some time. The difference is the International Water Boundary Commission decided to help us out in post so that everybody at these access and egress points on the river are fully knowledgeable of what the rules are. And I think that's already helped this year.
All right, Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today on Voice of the Public. Always glad to hear from you.
Thank you, Casey.
And coming up next on KRWG Public Media, it's Leora Zeitlin and Intermezzo. Intermezzo by request until 4 o'clock this afternoon. And then I hope you'll stay tuned for All Things Considered from 4 till 7. Thank you very much to our engineer, Mark Johnson, for keeping us on the air today.